This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
The night sky for October 2015. I sometimes think that October is perhaps the best time to view the heavens. We see much of what there is to see, because after sunset setting over in the west, we have the summer triangle, the bright stars Vega, Deneb and Altair, and the constellation of Cygnus the Swan, Lyra and Aquila. And that's a beautiful region of the sky. The brighter stars of Cygnus the Swan make up what's called the Northern Cross, and the faintest of those, nearer the horizon as it's setting over in the west, is Albireo. This is a wonderful double star, well worth looking at with a small telescope, sort of a golden blue pair of stars. And then higher in the south, we have the square of Pegasus, a good test of how transparent the sky is, and also how good your eyes are, is how many stars you can typically see inside that square. To be honest, I don't tend to see very many now. The top left star of the square of Pegasus is called Alpheratz. It's actually Alpha Andromedae, and it's the starting point to find the great galaxy in Andromeda, M31. You go one bright star to the left, fork round about 30 degrees, to the second bright star, then turn through a right angle to the right, past one star, and then hopefully you'll see a fuzzy glow. And if my voice isn't very good today, it's because I was up till about 3 o'clock this morning imaging it with an 8-inch telescope. Again, if the sky is very transparent, there's a chance of actually finding M33 in Triangulum. Start at Andromeda, come back to the star where you turn sharp right, and carry on a bit further, I suspect, and you should find M33. But it's not very bright. It needs a very transparent sky to see it, and probably something like 8 by 40 binoculars. Above Andromeda is Cassiopeia, the W shape. In fact, the right-hand V of the W actually points down to Andromeda. It's another way of finding it. And then along the Milky Way, because that's tracking across the sky from Cygnus through Cassiopeia, we have Perseus and Auriga. And between Cassiopeia and Perseus, we have a wonderful region containing the double cluster, two lovely open clusters side by side. Again, it's a lovely thing to see. Auriga is rising over in the east. It again has some very nice open clusters. They're called M37, M38, and M36. Not actually in that order. But finally, if you stay up a reasonable time, as I did last night, you will actually see the Pleiades rising higher in the east, and below that the orange-red star of Aldebaran. It lies in the direction of the Hyades cluster, although it's only about half the distance from us to it. And again, well after midnight, you'll actually see the stars of Orion rising. So if you stayed up for a long time on an October night, you'd have a lovely view of the heavens. But what about the planets? Well, to be honest, all of the planetary fun this month is in the pre-dawn sky. There's very little to see, sadly, in the evening. First of all, what about Jupiter? It's one of the three pre-dawn planets that we can observe this month, along with Mars and Venus. Shining at magnitude -1.7, increasing a fraction during the month, it starts the month the lowest of the three, and will be just 12 degrees above the eastern horizon as dawn breaks. It rises earlier as the month progresses, moving upwards towards Regulus under the body of Leo, the lion. And as we shall see, we'll meet with Mars on the 17th of the month. As the Earth moves towards Jupiter, the size of its disk increases slightly from 31.4 to 33 arcseconds. So early risers should be able to easily see the equatorial bands in the atmosphere and the four Galilean moons as they weave their way around it. Well, Saturn, at the start of October, there's just a chance to see it. It's shining at magnitude +1.6, so not that bright, And the elevation will be just about 7 degrees above the southwestern horizon, about 45 minutes after sunset. And as the month progresses, it will become increasingly hard to spot. It starts the month in eastern Libra, setting around 2 hours after sun, but passes into Scorpius on the 16th, and is less than 1 degree above Beta Scorpii on the 26th of the month. Sadly, of course, the atmosphere will seriously limit our view of its 15 arcsecond disk and rings, which are now actually open to about 24 degrees. That's pretty good. To be honest, we'll have to wait for a few months until it can be seen again in the pre-dawn sky. Mercury is also a pre-dawn object this month, becoming visible at magnitude plus 0.3 around the 11th, close to a thin crescent moon, but just 8 degrees above the horizon some 40 minutes before sunrise. Binoculars may well be needed to spot it. On that day, Mercury will lie some 20 degrees below Jupiter. It reaches its greatest elongation west on the 16th, but then falls back towards the sun, brightening to magnitude minus 1 as it does so, but obviously then becoming harder to spot even though it's brighter. Mars is also a pre-dawn object, starting the month almost halfway between Venus above and Jupiter below, shining at magnitude plus 1.8, some 23 degrees above the eastern horizon, about an hour before sunrise. On the mornings of the 17th and 18th, Mars, then at a magnitude of plus 1.7, is less than half a degree from magnitude minus 1.8 Jupiter, which actually will appear almost exactly 8 times wider than Mars. With its disk just 4 arcseconds across, no details will be seen on its salmon pink surface, unless, of course, you have access to the Hubble Space Telescope. Venus, shining initially at magnitude minus 4.7, will dominate the pre-dawn sky this month and will be some 30 degrees above the horizon as dawn breaks at the start of October. On the 26th of the month, it reaches greatest elongation west, some 46 degrees away in angular distance from the sun. It then rises some 4 hours before the sun, although apparently its disk will not appear half-lit until several days later. It's an interesting phenomenon. Its disk diameter shrinks from 33 to 23 arcseconds during the month, but at the same time, the percentage of the disk which is illuminated, it's called a phase, increases from 35 to 53%. As a result, the effective area reflecting the sun's light remains almost constant, which is why the magnitude only drops to minus 4.5 by month's end. Well, what about the highlights? They largely are linked to those planets, but also October is a very good month to observe Uranus with a small telescope. It comes into opposition, and that's when it's nearest the Earth, on the night of the 11th, 12th of October. And it'll be particularly well seen around opposition because then it's new moon. So no moonlight will intrude. Its magnitude is plus 5.9, so Uranus should be easily spotted in binoculars lying in the southern part of Pisces to the east of the circlet asterism and about 3 degrees south of a line joining 4th magnitude Epsilon Piscium and Delta Piscium. And I give a chart on the night sky page on the Jodrell Bank website. Nicely, it rises to an elevation of about 45 degrees when due south. And given the telescope of 4 inches or more diameter, it should be possible to see it has a disk. It's about 3.6 arcseconds across. It has a rather nice pale green-blue tint. If you have a large telescope, there's quite an observing challenge to try and pick up its 4 brightest satellites, Ariel, Umbriel, Titania, and Oberon. They're all about 14th magnitude, so you need a good night, excellent seeing, and a telescope of at least 8 inches or more. But that's a thing to try. So finally, those links between the various planets in the pre-dawn sky. October the 3rd, looking east, if clear, you'll see the planets Venus above, Mars middle, and Jupiter below, making a rather lovely arc across the sky below the body of Leo. And between Mars and Venus, you should also spot Regulus, Alpha Leonis. On the 8th and 9th, 1 hour before sunrise, the planets Venus, Mars and Jupiter will be joined by a thin crescent moon, again in the eastern sky, about an hour before sunrise. Jupiter is closing in on Mars, and it might just be possible to spot Mercury lying just above the horizon if you have a very clear view in this direction. It might be better to spot Mercury on the 11th, about 30 minutes before sunrise. Given clear skies, again, and a low eastern horizon, Mercury will be just 2.5 degrees to the lower left of a very thin crescent moon. That would make a very nice imaging opportunity. October the 17th, 1 hour before sunrise, there is a conjunction of Jupiter and Mars. So if clear, you should be able to spot Mars, shining at magnitude plus 1.7, just 24 arc minutes to the left of Jupiter at magnitude minus 1.8. And Venus at magnitude minus 4.4 will then be lying about 6 degrees to their upper right. I quite often give you something to observe on the lunar surface, and this month I've chosen Mons Piton and the crater Cassini. Mons Piton is an isolated lunar mountain located in the eastern part of Mare Imbrium, southeast of the crater Plato and west of the crater Cassini. It has a diameter of 25 kilometers and a height of 2.3 kilometers. And you can actually calculate the height from the length of the shadow it casts. It's quite a nice exercise for astronomy students. Cassini is a 57-kilometer diameter crater which has been flooded with lava. It's then been impacted many times and holds within its borders two significant craters, Cassini A, the larger, and Cassini B. So it's a nice little bit of the moon to look at. I enjoy that part. And you've also got over to the left Sinus Iridum, the Sea of Rainbows. And above that, as I said, Plato. So the moon is nice. I know it sometimes stops us seeing faint objects, but when it's there, enjoy it. And have a good month of observing.
Thanks for that, Ian. And for our Antipodean listeners, here's Haritina Mogasanu with the night sky where you are.
Welcome to Aotearoa, New Zealand, where the sea surrounds us from all directions, the sky is darker than dark and the stars are very bright. My name is Haritina Mogosanu, and today I will be your storyteller from Space Place at Carter Observatory in the Southern Hemisphere. For the last few months, here in New Zealand, we have been looking a lot at the stars in our flag. This is the first time in history that all New Zealanders will have a say in the design of a new New Zealand flag. Our current flag was designed in 1859 and adopted as the national flag in 1902. It flies the Union Jack and the Southern Cross. So we will start our journey of the October night sky pointing at the Southern Cross, or Crux as it is officially named by the International Astronomical Union. We will follow the Milky Way as usual, looking at what other wonderful things we can see along it. On the way across the sky, we will talk about the third brightest, second brightest, and the brightest stars in the sky and where to find them. We will discover luminous and massive stars along the way. We will also look at flags of the world that have stars, moons and suns, and finally wander away with the planets in the morning sky. So why don't you just turn south? At night, south is opposite from the part of the sky known as the ecliptic, where we can see the sun and the planets and the moon. In the southern hemisphere, the ecliptic goes through the northern part of the sky. Always pointing to the Southern Cross in the southwest are the pointers, Beta and Alpha Centauri, making a vertical pair at about 60 degrees declination south. Alpha Centauri, the top pointer, is the closest naked eye star at 4.3 light years away, and it's the third brightest star in the entire sky. Beta Centauri is a blue giant star, very hot and very luminous, hundreds of light years away. Our most famous constellation is also the smallest of the 88 constellations of the sky, covering a patch of only 68 square degrees. Although about 5,000 years ago it was completely visible at midnight during spring, even from mid-latitudes in the northern hemisphere, the Earth's precession gradually brought it beneath the northern line. The general precession, as it is known in astronomy, is the wobble of the Earth about its axis. This wobble will also bring into view different polar stars. The circuit is completed in 26,000 years, which, coincidentally, is the distance towards the center of the Milky Way. Because of the precession, the Southern Cross is only circumpolar now to those living south of 34 degrees latitude south, although it can be seen up to below 26 degrees latitude north, the latitude of Miami. Circumpolar means it never sets nor rises, but travels the sky in a big circle. The Southern Cross was originally part of the constellation of Centaurus. Augustin Royer established the Southern Cross as a constellation in 1679. The Southern Cross is a true beacon of the Southern Hemisphere. It is very easy to find directions by it, even though it's not indicating the South Celestial Pole directly. Personally, I find it easier to find my way here in the Southern Hemisphere with the help of the Southern Cross than I did in the Northern Hemisphere looking for Polaris. The Southern Cross is a constellation within the Sky River of the Milky Way. Being so small, it fits almost perfectly in the white flow of the stars. Opposite the Southern Cross, also within the Milky Way and circumpolar to the Northern Hemisphere, is Cassiopeia, the W Queen. The Southern Cross is the home of the beautiful open cluster jewel box, or NGC 4755, which to the naked eye appears like a fuzzy patch. The telescope would reveal stars that shine in many colors, and they are very beautiful. Lower in the sky than the Southern Cross in October, it's the Diamond Cross, an asterism in the southern constellation of Carina. The patterns that people make of the stars are called asterisms. In contrast, constellations are set areas or patches of the sky, just like countries on Earth, which takes their name from asterisms. Asterisms are dot-to-dot doodles, fanciful patterns on the celestial firmament. So the Diamond Cross asterism, just like its name describes it, looks like a diamond, pointing towards the Milky Way at one side, adjacent to Theta Carinae, is a small open cluster visible with binoculars. Theta Carinae marks the northeastern end of the Diamond Cross asterism, and it's also the brightest star in the open star cluster IC2602. The cluster is also known as the Running Man or the Southern Pleiades, but to me it has always looked like the letter M. Also, in the constellation of Carina, one of the most spectacular stars of the southern sky, Eta Carinae, is a stellar system containing at least two stars with a combined luminosity over 5 million times that of the Sun. Its size is about 250 times the size of the Sun. Colliding powerful winds form a bow shock, similar to the sonic boom from a supersonic airplane. That then heats the gas between the stars. The two stars travel around each other along highly elliptical paths during their 5.5-year-long orbit. The Chandra X-ray Observatory discovered that depending on where each star is on its oval-shaped trajectory, the distance between them changes by a factor of 20. Stars like Eta Carinae are just a few floating among the rest of 400 billion that make our galaxy. At about 7,500 light-years from Earth, it was first recorded as a fourth magnitude star. It brightened considerably over the period 1836 to 1856 in an event known as the Great Eruption. Eta Carinae became the second brightest star in the sky in 1843 before fading to well below naked eye visibility. I have seen Eta Carinae looking through a 40-centimeter Bollar and Chivens telescope here at the space place at Carter Observatory in Wellington. Or, to be more precise, I have seen the Homunculus Nebula. It looked like a tiny hourglass. This is probably the most spectacular deep sky memory I have from the Southern Hemisphere. I remember how the silence of the night felt heavy and dense around me whilst my eye was stuck to the telescope. I saw it using my peripheral vision with the help of my rod cells from the retina. The time almost stopped for me whilst I was basking in the glory of the light I was receiving from Eta Carinae. What a night! From a star invisible to the naked eye, let's jump onto the other side of the magnitude scale. Let's look at the brightest star from Carina, Canopus, the famous navigator of the Golden Fleece ship, Argonavis. In Maori, this star is called Atutahi, and he is the chief of all the stars in the sky. Low in the southeast, Canopus can be seen at dusk, often twinkling colorfully. It swings up into the eastern sky during the night. Canopus is a circumpolar star as seen from Wellington. Not only is Canopus the brightest star from Carina, but it is also the second brightest star in the entire sky to our naked eye. As many astronomers from New Zealand called their cats Canopus, this star is also known here as the Cat Star. A yellow star, Canopus, is 13 times the sun's brightness and 300 light years away. Now on to our last cross. The False Cross is yet another asterism in the flow of the Milky Way. It belongs to the constellation of Vela. A bit bigger than the Southern Cross, it looks almost identical, but you can tell that it is the False Cross because it doesn't have pointer stars pointing at it. Both the Diamond Cross and the False Cross are sometimes mistaken for the true Crux, although the False Cross has always been a worse deceiver than the Diamond Cross, because most of its stars have approximately the same declinations as the stars of Crux. The story goes here in New Zealand that whoever followed the False Cross ended up in Australia. If that were true, then Australia would have had perhaps the False Cross on their flag. Instead, it has the Southern Cross as well. However, the Australian flag also sports a fifth star, Epsilon Crucis, as well as the big star of the Commonwealth placed just underneath the Union Jack. The Southern Hemisphere teams with astronomy-related national flags. The smallest of the 88 constellations is found on state flags, provinces' flags, company logos, and many more. Australia, New Zealand, Niue, Tokelau, Papua New Guinea, Samoa, and in the South American continent, Santa Cruz in Argentina, Antarctica and Mercosur, which is the South American common market, and the flags flown by Argentina and Chile in Antarctica have the Southern Cross on them. Whilst most of these countries fly the Southern Cross, I believe that the most spectacular flag, astronomically speaking, it's the flag of Brazil, a true star chart. It is in fact a sky chart over Brazil's night sky on November 15, when the Republic of Brazil was proclaimed. There are 21 stars on the chart representing the states of Brazil, including the stars of the Southern Cross, Canopus, Procyon and Sirius, Sigma Octantis, Spica and also Scorpius, which is where I want to go next in our journey. Scorpius. It's the official name of the constellation, which is only a patch in the sky and has an eye-catching asterism in it that looks like everything it was named after. Scorpion, fishhook, question mark, dragon, and many other things. Visible from New Zealand at this time of the year, you can find it if you follow the two pointers of the Southern Cross, but in opposite direction. Above them lays Triangulum Australe, below is Lupus the Wolf. In front of them, the fishhook of the ancient navigator Maui almost dragged the Milky Way down from the sky. According to the Maori legend, it will continue to do so all throughout October. Rehua, the Maori name for Antares, marks the bait of the hook. Above Scorpius, the fishhook, is Corona Australis, the southern crown, a round group of stars that look just like fireworks spreading apart. or like a teaspoon of the teapot, according to some who like tea. As observed from the Northern Hemisphere, the asterism looks like a scorpion, which only goes up above the horizon for 30 degrees, which makes it seem to rather crawl around the horizon like a gigantic scorpion would do. Imagine this in the desert of Sahara at night. Once the bottom of a sea, the desert now teems with creatures like the scorpion, and its name made it to the stars, given probably by the other great navigators by the stars, the ancient caravan leaders. Here in Aotearoa, New Zealand, because of our position on Earth, Scorpius climbs all the way up to zenith, which is why the fishing hook was considered the zenith asterism of New Zealand by the ancient Maori navigators. Antares, the brightest star in the constellation of Scorpius, is a red giant star, 600 light-years away and 19,000 times brighter than the Sun. Red giants are dying stars, ringing their last of the thermonuclear energy from their cores. Massive ones like Antares end in a spectacular supernova explosion, although it is believed that nothing will compare to the explosion from Eta Carinae, which is expected to end as a hypernova in the near astronomical future. Above and right of the fishhook, the teapot made by the brightest stars of Sagittarius is upside down in our southern hemisphere view. Below the fishhook is Saturn, currently the only planet in the evening sky. It is midway down the western sky at dusk and sets in the southwest around 10 p.m. mid-month. The moon is just below Saturn on the 16th and well to its right on the 17th. As we have arrived to the moon, please note that this is also on some countries' flags. And a moon-bearing flag is not automatically a Muslim flag. In fact, the crescent moon and star symbol predates Islam by thousands of years. The city of Byzantium, also known as Constantinople and now Istanbul, adopted the crescent moon as its symbol long before Islam. But when the Turks conquered Constantinople in 1453, they adopted its flag as well. Algeria, Azerbaijan, Brunei, Union of the Comoros, Laos, Libya, Malaysia, Maldives, Mauritania, Pakistan, Palau, which has a full moon on its flag, Singapore, Tunisia, Turkey, Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, Western Sahara, South Carolina, and Northern Cyprus, they all have the moon on their flags. Whereas the US has their flag on the moon, a star-spangled banner. This is the furthest place that a flag was taken by humans. Going back on the path of the Milky Way, right at the center of it, a spectacular bird guards the center of our galaxy. This is the Milky Way Kiwi, a shape made from dark dust within the Milky Way. More than 10 years ago, astrophotographers from New Zealand were taking snapshots of the night sky. One of them looked at the pictures and realized that the dark patch known in the Northern Hemisphere as the Dark Horse, being upside down in here, looked like a great galactic kiwi bird. But as I realized later while traveling, you either have to be from New Zealand or have friends in New Zealand to know what a kiwi bird looks like. The Milky Way Kiwi is my absolute favorite object in the night sky, and once I saw it with the naked eye from Lake Tekapo in the South Island. The Milky Way is our edgewise view of the galaxy, the pancake of billions of stars of which the Sun is just one. The thick hub of the galaxy, 26,000 light years away, is in Sagittarius, the actual center, with a black hole 4 million times the Sun's mass, is hidden by dust clouds in space, which make interesting shapes like our Milky Way Kiwi. The direction of the black hole, it's right on the top of the head of the Milky Way Kiwi, just like a jewel on a crown. So, at just 26,000 light-years from Earth, Sagittarius A is one of the very few black holes where we can actually witness the flow of matter nearby. The Very Large Telescope in Chile has some interesting stories to tell about that. Sliding down the Milky Way towards north, the skyline meets the horizon near Vega. Vega is setting in the late evening. It is 50 times brighter than the sun shining from 25 light years away. Vega is the fifth brightest star in the sky. Looking in the same direction as for Vega, but in the morning sky, you will notice the dog star Sirius. Sirius is a blue giant and the brightest star in the sky, twice as bright as Canopus, the cat star. This does not mean that dogs are brighter than cats in general, but just that the dog is closer to us at about 8 light years distance. But it seems that this dog's yard is the home of both the brightest naked eye star and also of the largest known star. That is VY Canis Majoris, a red hypergiant star in the Canis Major constellation, our big dog. The star is located about 5,000 light years from Earth. Its upper size is believed to be more than 1,540 times the size of the Sun. Placed in our solar system, its surface would extend out past the orbit of Saturn. That's the biggest star that we know of, but the Milky Way probably has dozens of stars that are even larger, obscured by gas and dust, so we can't see them. Neighboring it, in the constellation of Orion, Betelgeuse, in Maori Putara, it's a familiar star located in the shoulder of Orion. This red supergiant star has a radius of 950 to 1,200 times the size of the Sun and would engulf the orbit of Jupiter if placed in our solar system. With the Milky Way descending from the heavens in October, the sky looks almost empty on the other side, a part of a few smidges and bright stars. But that means nothing. When the Hubble Space Telescope turned toward a part of the sky that was carefully selected to be as empty of stars as possible, it took the famous Hubble Ultra Deep Sky picture, the deepest portrait of the visible universe ever achieved by humankind. Where our eye sees only empty blackness, Hubble reveals a universe teeming with galaxies. Still, with the naked eye, it's almost empty. Nearing zenith, it's Grus, the famous double-double asterism. Towards north, the great square of Pegasus, the flying horse, adorns the northern horizon. Underneath it, we can just barely observe the fourth galaxy visible with the naked eye, Andromeda, is a dash on the blackness of the sky. Towards south, the large and small clouds of Magellan look like two misty patches of light in the southeast sky. They are easily seen by eye on a dark moonless night. They are galaxies just like our Milky Way, but much smaller. The large cloud is about 5% the mass of our galaxy and the small one about 3%. That it's still many billions of stars in each. And it is believed that the Large Magellanic Cloud is the home of the most massive stars that we have observed. On moonless evenings in a dark rural sky, the zodiac light is visible in the west. It looks like late twilight. One sees a faint broad column of light passing through Libra. It is sunlight reflecting off meteoric dust in the plane of the solar system. The dust may have come from a big comet many centuries ago. Bright planets appear in the eastern dawn sky. Brilliant silver Venus rises 2 hours before the sun through October. That's around 5 a.m. at the beginning of the month. Golden Jupiter is on the dawn horizon at 6 a.m. before and right of Venus. Between the two bright planets at the beginning of the month are the white star Regulus and the reddish planet Mars. Mars has a flag too, although according to the Outer Space Treaty, no country can claim it. the flag was created as a symbol of the vision for the future history of Mars, in which the planet is transformed from red to green and then blue, just like the Earth. It flies the colors red, green and blue, and it symbolizes also liberty, as every tricolor flag does. Beyond Mars, Jupiter moves up the dawn sky. By mid-month, it is passing Mars. The pair are less than a full moon's width apart on the morning of the 18th. Around the 26th, Jupiter passes by Venus, making an eye-catching pairing of bright planets in the dawn. Jupiter and Mars are on the far side of the Sun. Jupiter is 920 million kilometers away. Mars is 345 million kilometers. Venus is on our side of the Sun, 92 million kilometers away on the 15th. The Sun is rising in the morning for most of us, and with it a new day begins. There are many countries that have the Sun on their flags. I want to mention only one, the flag of Tuktoyaktuk, located in the Northwest Territories of Canada. What's so special about this flag? It harbors the midnight sun, something I always dreamed to see. Flags are a reminder of things that matter to us. Their symbolism is helping us focus our attention like a beacon in the wilderness. Beacons help guide navigators to their destinations, just like the stars can do. May the stars be with you. This concludes our Jotcast for October 2015 at Space Place at Carter Observatory. As the Maori say, Efiti ana na fetu o te rangi, the stars are shining in the sky. Ko takoto ake nei ko papatu anuku, whilst Mother Earth lays beneath. Kia kaha and clear skies from the space place at Carter Observatory in Aotearoa, New Zealand.